You don't need any introduction. Yeah, hello. Thank you very much, Frau Emminger. It's always a great pleasure to be here. And we at Merz Academy, we really, really appreciate your support and this cooperation that we have with the library. So I'm thankful for helping to bring Geraldine Juarez here today. Thank you, Geraldine, for appearing here in flesh. It is, and Geraldine told me that it's her first IRL appearance after pandemic, so an event. Geraldine comes from Mexico City, but lives in Swedish Göteborg, but very often to meet in German Berlin. These days, since 20 years, she's an artist, yeah? Since 20 years, she makes objects, installations, performances that are showing, I would say, the beauty and that's at the same time the misery of the sometimes. Beauty, sometimes misery of the digital world. She also writes, and it's very great that she doesn't forget to put her thoughts in on paper and on digital paper, because, for example, her essay that she wrote last summer, right? Ghost Chain is from summer 2021. Ah, it's 1 year old. Yeah. I discovered it in summer. Last summer, and I should say that this was a very important ghost, I mean your essay Ghost Chain, it was a very important moment for me. It explained a lot of things to me and also helped me form my own thoughts and ideas about the current situation in art market and all the craze that is around us, and also it was helping me then to communicate it with the to communicate it then forward to the students. And students, by the way, are here, and I hope they will have also questions to you today. I will quote the first statement from your essay, which is, "Since I first learned about blockchain technologies and its currencies in 2013, my conviction, now reaffirmed, has been that I'm not interested in any technologies that leave people behind and make everything more difficult for everyone. Full stop." And it was 2013, so it's almost 10 years ago. It was also the year then Geraldine started a series of performances that were called Hello Bitcoin, and it is where she literally burnt, destroyed Bitcoins. And I would say, again, it's 2013. I remember this time as quite time of the excitement, or at least big curiosity about crypto in hacker, activist, artist circles also. I myself was very curious, but for Geraldine already at that time, it was again full stop, yeah, as you said. So, yeah, but today, again, 10 years later, in 2022, today and tonight, we talk about NFTs, non-fungible tokens, that give a promise to all the artists that they will be, that they will prosper. Everybody will be rich and happy forever, because there is a crypto ledge, crypto Kassenbuch, that will take care of it, and the promise really became so loud and so omnipresent also again a year ago because of some astronomical sums sales and because of the articles that were everywhere. So one could couldn't talk about anything else than to say that this, what we have now, is entifization, not cryptotization, but of the NFTization of art market. And there was another quote maybe I wanted to make than Yevgeny Morozov in the introduction to the interview he made with you also last year, and also referring to your work of 2013, he said that, yeah, now it's not artists, not art market burning crypto, but it's crypto burning it's the other way around. It's crypto that is burning the art world. Yeah, so we are, I would say that, Geraldine, thank you again for coming here. Her talk is titled The Asset in the Machine, but there is also an alternative title, which is This is Financial Advice, and it is also the title of her new essay that was published some hours ago on the Swedish important magazine, which name I forgot right now. And I like the title very much. It's a financial advice, and I'm very much looking forward for what Geraldine has to say to us, because we know what NFT community has to say. I hear, let's talk about myself, the evangelists saying, came for art, stayed for experience. We all gonna make it, and no one will steal our JPEGs. And I think you can have another view on it. Thank you, Geraldine, for being here, and thank you, everybody.
So, yeah, hello. Thanks for being here. I really appreciate it that all of you came today. As Olya said, this is the first time I'm giving like a presentation of this kind, like a live talk since like 3 years ago. So, it's weird. It's cool. And I'm also very happy that I am doing this in a public library, which is basically the opposite of blockchain culture and the ownership economy. In the sense that there is a space where profit is suspended and laws are modified in order to make socialized, you know, access to things we like culture, like books and music and films and stuff. So I was, while preparing this talk, I also was thinking that if I ever need to talk about this, I should make an effort to do it in like public libraries, which is what we need more, not like more crypto or blockchains. And so, yeah, it's like a very good context for me to talk about this. I'm going to talk about assets. I'm not going to really explain what is an NFT or like the details of crypto trading and that kind of stuff, but I'm going to talk about something that is related, which is assets, which is really the essence of all of this from my perspective, and also about the larger system in which this is embedded in, which is asset management. So these two topics are part of like two different essays, one that I wrote last year, The Ghost Chain, or Taking Things for What They Are, is the title, which responds a little bit to this thing that Olya was mentioning about this super grandiose language and big promises while not calling things by their name, which is kind of weird. So that was the first essay I wrote. And while preparing this talk, I was going to come here since a few months ago, while preparing this presentation kind of end up in a new essay. So that's why we presented it was posted online yesterday, which is, this is, the title is This is Financial Advice, as opposed of this not financial advice that evangelists are, or like, you know, crypto investors are giving all the time. So I want to start then. I think I need to give you a little bit of intro why I'm talking about this, no? And I've been, like, well, since 2000, as Olya mentioned, in 2013, I did two performances, one in 2013 and one in 2014, where I burned €1 of Bitcoins that back then were, one 9 milli Bitcoins. Now they're like 400 euros, I think, a little bit less than that. We will go through it. And so I did just this performance kind of like as a gesture against kind of this immutable value and this trustlessness. What I did was burn these Bitcoins and grill marshmallows with people I didn't know. And we can see the video. Sorry. I am not super good at. So, this is just documentation of it. I'm going to. Basically, I put the wallet and the key inside, and I burned it, so I couldn't recover it. And playing a little bit with this thing of proof of burn and stuff. There was not much I could do after this. I did this performance twice, and I was like, okay, I'm not interested to engage with this anymore, you know, because it was, like, the people that were, like, promoting it were, like, you know, super right-wing people in Sweden, or, like, Max Kaiser and these people that now are, like, super powerful within Bitcoin. But the attention was more, like, in Bitcoin. Now, NFTs and all this stuff, it's more like Ethereum, which is another currency and another chain. But this is kind of the background of why I'm talking about this today. The other kind of work that I did that I guess is related is since 2014 also, I started writing about the kind of assembling a preemptive history of the Google Cultural Institute, where it's the first time I realized the word asset used as for assembling collections. Like, the way the Google Cultural Institute was assembling all these objects that they were digitizing from public collections were organized under assets, like the address you could see when you scrape the page. It said asset and then the object. So I did some performances, I did some installations, but actually it was like more successful kind of writing about it. So I wrote like a series of essays, and I still kind of adding to this kind of history of the Google Cultural Institute that it has to do a lot with this idea of the real thing and visiting the real thing in the museum. You know, I haven't really got through there because there's like a lot of stuff and not enough time, but this was another project that is related to this interest I had with this word asset, no? And another, I mean, project that I guess it's more related to my practice at large, is that I've been interested in, you know, copyright and property and value for a while. That's kind of like how I started making art, and specifically using piracy as a political practice against private property and specifically intellectual property. So I have a lot of work kind of related to that. I did this map in 2014, actually, when I was trying to map a little bit what was going on with capital and internet and culture, and, you know, how the context has changed, how things have, like, the context has transformed. And it's kind of interesting that it ended up in Bitcoin. You know, there was, like, a lot of stuff related to piracy, when we use hard drives, how it changed to web, BitTorrent, financial crisis. It was all this kind of context that now it came back when you talk about Bitcoin and Ethereum and all this crypto, that it's a reaction to kind of this. So I end up in micropayments, Bitcoin, precarity there. And I was like, oh, maybe I should just for this talk kind of try to recalibrate that or continue that mapping. And we will come back to this maybe when I talk to Olya after. But I started kind of like trying to organize a little bit or like expand that map in relation to blockchain culture and crypto finance. And we will see it later with more time. I guess just something that is kind of important is to, and this is related a little bit with a text that Olya wrote. That's why I think it's important for the conversation that in the web, we used to have my site and my homepage. And then in the web 2.0, it was about me, no, like hashtag my selfie, me, private life. It was more about self. And now it's more about mine, like what you own. So yeah, this is obviously not exhaustive, and I just started. It's like a sketch. But I think it can help us as we move through to see, you know, to remember kind of like the concept. So, okay. Another thing that I need to mention is that today I'm not going to explain NFTs or blockchains or the details of crypto. I have some definitions that we can go through that are online that you can check. But I want to say why I'm not doing that. And the reason is because I am not an evangelist. I am not here to boost crypto, and I am not an investor, and I have zero interest in Web3. And I want less crypto, not more. And in short, I'm an artist against the assetization of digital culture. And so I'm not here to talk about the not-so-bad parts of crypto, because they are really marginal, and they still contribute to the intensification of a cultural economy that it's already terrible, because the cultural economy in which artists operate is terrible. And then what we get, it's blockchain culture, I guess. So, and the second reason why I'm not explaining those details is because the important part for me is to see the bigger trends in the circulations of capital that affect the living conditions of artists, and that my opinion require more attention. And crypto finance is a new facet of capitalist expansion, different but not better, because there is not such thing as better capitalism. But from my perspective, we should pay more attention to assetization and asset management when we talk about crypto and the internet of assets and the ownership economy. Being against something is really not super easy, because you need to take seriously the object of aversion or critique. I mean, it's not a new observation, but critique starts with disappointment and despair. And this is a lot what like crypto culture like produces on me. So that's, and I mean, it's not an apology or something. It's something that like you need to engage sometimes with things you don't like. Like art is not only about things you like, I guess, sorry. So, but anyway, of course, all these of blockchain culture and crypto finance are a cultural phenomena that we need to take seriously, including their aesthetic dimension, which is obviously not about how things look, but how they circulate, their intention, how they are consumed, how they are made or minted. And I mean, this map is a little bit about that, you know, about that the transformation that infrastructure has experimented, and then therefore art circulate in different ways. So yeah, I wanted to give that like as a context. And I just want to make, I put Web3 between quotes, because Web3 is something that doesn't exist yet. Of course, there is like a lot of investment and a lot of gradients and that wanted to be materialized and operative as soon as possible, but still is not operative. There's just a bunch of like sketches and experiments and stuff. I guess we could say that Evgeny Morozov also recently described the Web3 as a map without territory, which is maybe like a good description of the state of it. Okay, so now I'm going to just super fast. These definitions, I grab it from different places, like Web3 from the Wikipedia. It's an idea of a new iteration of the web. I guess that's like, okay. It's an umbrella term for a variety of things like crypto, NFTs, DAOs, decentralized finance. a map without territory, as I mentioned, or that's me, the casino layer of the web. I wanted to give you more comparisons so you can choose which one you like. What is Ethereum? I think the best thing about is to go through the page of Ethereum to know what they think is Ethereum. And yeah, Ethereum is a technology that's home to digital money, global payments and applications. This is a financial technology. Yeah, the community has built a booming digital economy, bold new ways for creators to earn online, and so much more. Whatever is that much more. It's open to everyone, wherever you're in the world, and all you need is the internet. That's the definition of Ethereum. I also hear, if you see the first web was packets, then content, and then assets. This web is the asset web. And then I wanted to put the definition of packet because when there's a lot of like discourse right now or like a desire of the Web3 investors to come back to the beginners of the web. You know, they said like, oh, we need to go back to that moment in which the web was decentralized. Something got, and I agree, something got derailed, which is basically investment. There was a lot of venture capital coming and building like apps. And then we got the social web and they want to come back to this kind of packet internet, which is like a internet where the emphasis was on files, on packets. It was vernacular. You know, it was about net art. I mean, it was not perfect neither, or I don't want to idealize it, but, the packet web, the emphasis on packets was more in that web that these investors want to come back. And I think packet is like a word, a concept that we don't use anymore when we talk about the network. And yeah, a packet is a small segment of a larger message, is the data sent over computer networks. That super famous, you know, NetArt diagram of the arc happened here. It was really like a packet, what was pointed at that kind of what was happening there. A network packet is a formatted unit of data carried by a packet switched network. And this is kind of important. A packet consists of control information and user data. And the latter is also known as a payload, which no one talks about payload anymore. And I think packets, I didn't put that, but for me, the internet is made of packets. That's really what it makes the internet be the internet. Another definition we might need as we move over is crypto, which by Wikipedia is a jargon term of cryptocurrency. I agree. And I make this distinction between cryptography and cryptocurrency. And I write crypto for cryptocurrency and crypto for cryptography. But that's just my way of like not participating in that kind of narrative. Then we have NFTs, which is, this is the definition of Ethereum again, a way to represent anything unique as an Ethereum-based asset. And NFTs give more power to content creators than ever before. We don't have that. I mean, what they mean creators is like artists and cultural producers, which actually we don't have like a lot of power. So I don't know what they mean with ever before. And they're powered by smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain. Yeah, the smart contract is like the operative part of the NFTs. And Wikipedia has like, Wikipedia denied to list NFT like as an art medium recently, which I think it was okay. But they define NFTs as a non-fungible token. It's a non-interchangeable unit of data stored in a blockchain. A form of digital ledger that can be sold and traded. And in Ethereum, they describe it as tokens that we can use to represent ownership of unique items. When they said this thing of tokens that we can use to represent ownership of unique items, they are talking about tokenization. And tokenization is nothing more else than assetization. And this is why my emphasis is on assets. In fact, Ethereum described what they are trying to do as the internet of assets. And this is why I, you know, when I was researching about this, I was like, okay, let's focus on this asset aspect. So what I'm going to talk about now is what is an asset. Like, if this is going to be the Internet of Assets, and where Ethereum isn't just digital money, but anything you can own can be represented, traded, and put to use as a non-fungible token, which is something that's the asset part. It's like a unit of value that can be active and generate money and rent, and you can trade. And you can tokenize your art and get royalties automatically every time it's resold. That's just like copyright works. Sort of. Or use the token for something you own to take a loan. That's like a loan from a bank. So anyway, this is why I'm focusing. I wanted to give this background because this is why my emphasis is on assets. So assets, which in German is Vermögen, which is wealth. In Spanish is activos, which is crazy because it's like active wealth. In this collection of essays, Assetization, by Cambridge and Fabian Muneza, they don't describe the asset, although asset is an economic resource, something of value, something that someone of any value, any component, model, process, or framework of value that can be leveraged or reused. This is like a definition I like it from Cloudflare. But they focus more in the process of assetization, which is a process of transforming something, knowledge, JPEGs, real estate, into an asset that can be controlled, traded, and capitalized as a revenue stream. That's an NFT. That's what an NFT does. So with this essay, that it's, as I said, it's called the ghost chain, or taking things for what they are, I wanted to remove the fog produced by using the category of art, this emphasis on art, and its forms to conceal and divert the attention from the financial logic. Tokenization, as I said, is nothing else than assetization. And this process of turning something into a revenue-generating tradable resource can be anything. You know, you can use apartments, judge, JPEGs, GIFs, videos, ownership itself, crisis, you can assetize crisis, bet on futures. You know, it's really a process that it's not new from decentralized finance. This is the way finance operated when we got into this crisis in 2008, that supposedly is what Ethereum and Bitcoin and blockchain are reacting to. All these kind of like Ponzi's of assets, betting on the future, tokenizing housing, well, not tokenizing, sorry, assetizing housing, making housing an asset, using housing as a thing that gives you money, not something that gives housing to people. You know, that's really what produced the crisis in 2008. At levels that I cannot really explain. We all know that finance can be, well, we will go into that part, but in a much bigger scale. But now the way everything is being combined and the way they are using Ether to get loans on an ape and trade an ape and then, you know, sell it on or scam or, you know, all this kind of the style of investment is very kind of like the same of a risk kind of bet or like management of risk that couldn't be handled at some point during the crisis in the great crisis in 2008. So anyway, this is why this is why we are going to focus on assets. The text I wrote basically spent a lot of time trying to track the transformation of commodities into assets, of art, like when art was a commodity and became an asset, which is something that is not new. I don't know if any of you know about Freeport, which is this place where lots of art is just put in there. And when it changes ownership, you don't really need to move it because people don't put it in their house because if not, they will have to pay taxes. So it's these Freeports where they store art. And it's a little bit like this change from commodity to asset, it's not new. It has been taking time to to focus only on the ownership of art and not in really moving art in space. Or net art or like digital art didn't really have that problem, which is weird when you want to adapt digital art to this logic, you know, because the moving in space, you don't move bits in space like that. You switch packets, yeah, but you don't move things around in space. So it's very easy in a way to just focus on this abstract aspect of ownership. You know, you just like uncouple that, which that's one of the characteristics of assets, in fact. I'm going to, I have it here, that part of the essay. That, yeah, I mean, and assets, in this text I focus on these kinds of characteristics of assets, which are, for instance, the unbundling of ownership and control as a requirement to mobilize ghostly forms of property, that is, tokens that do not offer legal ownership. Or I also talk about the narrative transformation needed to turn participants from crypto artists, from artists into crypto artists, and produce kind of this investor gaze, like Kim Birch writes about that. This investor gaze manifest, like, you know, with these lasers, literally. You know, it was very obvious last year that everybody was just putting lasers and stuff. That's really like, it is crazy that it's not a metaphor. That's investor gaze, you know. Although he didn't grow in that context. In fact, they don't write about crypto. And yeah, shout out to them, like especially to Fabiano. They have been very supporting in trying, in I don't know, the exercise I'm doing in using their theory of assetization into crypto. But anyway, they don't write about that. But I mean, all of these things fit perfectly to understand this phenomenon. Well, in the text, I also wrote about the confusion and obsession with aura and the emergence of this kind of capitalized aura. And in general, between the interdependence between assetization and financialization, which are related but not identical. My essay kind of tried to take a stand against crypto and the emphasis on the future to give more value to the present. And I didn't want to give a proposal, because that's what investors want, that you give proposals. But I just wanted to just more suggest to refuse to participate in the process of capitalization of these chains. Like, just don't add blocks to the chains. That was basically my premise. To do this, I used the image of the ghost chain, which ghost chains are actually these... ghost chains are these chains in crypto that they have little volume, trade volume, or no one uses them. You know, they launch out a chain and a coin, and then it's not popular, so nobody uses it. They are called ghost chains. So since the financial imagination can only produce more conceptual stuff, the ghost chain for me was the perfect image for what the demise of crypto would look like. Think like empty apartments, rusty abandoned train tracks, landfills full of discarded bikes from startups, you know, these landfills of like bike assets. And anyway, all these kinds of discarded assets that litter the world. And this is how it would be for crypto. So the ghost chain is a non-productive, I was imagining the ghost chain as a non-productive blockchain full of born useless coins and dead links to intellectual property. Unverifiable because maybe it's not profitable, or because there were new laws that were prevented to crypto miners to keep verifying, so they need to shut down, or perhaps because of a sabotage from some neoludit movement. So the idea of the blockchain for me is a mathematical landfill, basically, a wasteland of crypto assets and a digital monument of a future promised by blockchain culture. The ghost chain is an image that politicizes assets in order to add some friction to this super smooth and complacent view of crypto trading as a way out from the absolute terrible and of unfair economy in which artists operate and work. I think it's important, and I say it, like, I think blockchain culture is what happens when you don't pay artists. This is what kind of we get, you know, it's a reaction of this kind, you know. I don't want to, because there is always this comparison of like, well, then what you're going to do. But I mean, the cultural environment in which we operate as an artist is not good. You know, there's no regulation of anything. I mean, you can do whatever you want in the art world in a way, but there's no regulation. That's why you have free ports. And, but also that's why you can pay artists very low, or that's why they can take forever in pay you. That's why, you know, fees are low or commissions are high. There are all these kind of problems. There's also lots of artists and not enough work for everyone. So a lot of artists, a lot of us need to work side jobs. This myth of the artist that is full time doing art is really just certain class of people can't do that. So, I mean, all of these constructs, all this propaganda that they give us with crypto, that this is a way out we have, it really, we really need to see that in context with the actual situation. You know, even to participate in this economy, you need to buy Ether. And one Ether is like 3,000 euros, a little bit more than 3,000 euros. I mean, who has that money on the side to buy one Ether, you know? It's not a joke, but I think this is a new asset class, you know, that they can do that. You own some assets that they generate some revenue, and then you can participate in this economy. That is kind of this combination of elitism and populism, you know. But anyway, we need to emphasize that a token or an NFT, it's a token because it's constantly verified and re-verified, not because it will save artists. There is like miners verifying constantly that this is a token, that this was, you know, traded by someone, that this is what it says that it is. It's not like a economy that it's like completely functional for artists. The mathematics may be immutable, but the idea of digital gold for everyone is just propaganda. So, well, I need to hurry because I want to just put this in a broader dynamic, which is the dynamic of asset manager capitalism. Very basically, asset manager capitalism is a term by Benjamin Brown. He's a political economist in like a university actually here in Germany. And basically he defined it as a regime of asset dominance, where everything is an asset, where asset prices rather than wages drive investment and consumption, and therefore become the main targets of macroeconomic policies. And this is not new, no, that governments actually invest, you know, in the stock market, and lots of, you know, public companies are open to the market and you can buy shares and that. I mean, this is, as I said, a bigger thing in which crypto is part of this. It's not different to it. It's like part of it. But one thing that it's in relation to artists, one thing that it's interesting is that as wages decrease and assets and their prices increases, with that, they commodify labor too, which this is something I write in this new essay. And the commodify labor is a concept of Leigh-Claire Labergeon. And she described it as a new configuration of value extraction in which the wage is dismissed, but the formal organization of work, its rhythms, commitments, and narrative remain. Which is a lot what is happening with artists. You know, we don't have a wage, but we have a lot of work. And we need to apply for things, and we need to prepare exhibitions, and we need to work, you know, side jobs that also are freelance and don't have a wage. But still, I mean, in a way, we are like busy but broke. You know, that's like, this is like a cup of my friend Babisha Pancha did. And that's a commodified labor. Like you just have all the form of work remains, but the remuneration for that work doesn't exist. No. So in asset capitalism, in asset management capitalism, on the top of all these things, artists became traders. And I think this is like a new development that we need to take, we need to pay attention, because the fact that now, kind of significant size of artists, like a significant amount of artists, incorporate trading as part of their practice. That's a new thing, you know? That's something that we need to... It used to be that you would do a project, you know, you would do this kind of intervention, conceptual art, of course, like art that is presented as something else. But, you know, it was like this kind of like a thing that would be presented as art, and but now is part of the labor of a lot of artists. So I think that's like a significant development, that there is a lot of like artists there's a lot of like art, or in other words, artistic practice got inserted into day trading. You can also see it like that. So with this as backdrop, it's really not difficult to understand how wageless artists were super low-hanging fruit, not only ready to be picked and ingested by the aggressive market mechanisms of the centralized finance, but also ready to be instrumentalized as the perfect promotional tool. Who would oppose a certain type of economy that can finally pay us? I think I will leave it there. And I think I can talk about these other things with Olya. I just want to finish with this slide here. This is a quote that says, "The economy is everywhere that life is not. And but however intertwined the two may become, they simply do not meld, and one can never be confused with the other." And this is like a quote of Raoul Bannekheim that it has been a little bit for me kind of my, I don't know, arrow to, it's like where I kind of like use as a axis to identify what is economy and what is not. And yeah. if you want to read the new text and the other text, they're in Paletten. And it's all of this, but more in detail and expanded. But it's already half an hour. I can't believe it. But yeah, that's it. And now I'm going to have a little conversation about this with Olya. And if you have questions, of course, you can ask. Thank you. Do you want to sit there? Yeah.
I think you should use the...
Is it? Yeah, mine is working.
Oh, again. Yeah? No.
It's only me. It's not okay, but we
it's on. Yeah, no, it's on. Now it's on. Okay. It's on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Geraldine. I have a lot of also questions, and so prepared to exchange with you about the new situation. But what is the financial advice?
Well, no, the thing is, this is financial advice is a title because of, you know, you often hear a lot of investors, artists, curators, or, you know, just chills giving you financial advice. And the first thing they said is like, this is not financial advice. And they need to say that because actually I think it's in the US, which the thing is, this is, all of this comes from like a specific context. Which is in the US, you know, it's like the banking crisis that affect the whole world, but started there. And, you know, there are like all these situations that, yeah, going healthcare is super expensive. People basically need to be rich to take care of themselves. So there, I mean, all of these come from a specific context. And I think also in that context, it's illegal to do this. So, I mean, I think promoting securities, which what it's probably NFTs and all of these are going to be at some point designated as such, I think it's illegal to do that. So that's why they always said things and they say, but of course this is not financial advice. And, but I mean, we are artists and I mean, it's crazy that we need to say this, you know, we are supposed that we can't just say, you know, this is financial advice, as, at least as an artist, you know. So this is the financial advice of all of this. For me, my financial advice is just to not add blocks to the chains. And it's totally financial advice, yes.
But to add packets to the network.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I didn't thought it like that. That sounds nice. Just like keep circulating packets. That could be one option, yeah. But I mean, I think basically, and I went through, but I mean, basically we need to kind of demand the cultural economy, you know, and cultural politics that give us good conditions to work, which starts for instance, having affordable housing. You know, like for instance, now in Berlin, rents are crazy expensive. You know, that thing drives art, that affects the conditions of living of artists. And it's because housing is considered an asset. You know, it's like an asset class. So for me, it goes more to that way, you know, and it's more about not individual profit, but trying to, you know, find a way in which it can be common benefit, you know, for artists and organize as artists, and which is super hard to organize if we don't have a boss and we don't have a wage, you know, but find a way to organize or like address this, the commodified labor condition and do something with it so we can change our conditions. Reach this gonna make it whatever good morning thing, that is not going to change our conditions of work.
Mm-hmm. When you said that stated also clearly things for what they are, you mentioned that artists, they become the traders. Yeah, it's expected. If you mint it, you should also take part.
Well, it's expected that you take care of your assets because I mean, actually, when this guy that created Ethereum, the whole point of Ethereum, at some point, there is one blog that they literally said that they wanted to remove the managers. The thing is, this thing, you will read the article if you want, but in these things of the asset, you know, asset management funds are managed by managers. There is literally managers that manage all these assets for people. And they get fees. They get pay fees for manage these assets and grow up the money of the people that is investing, which is sometimes pension funds and that kind of stuff. So Ethereum removed that with smart contracts. They automatize these kind of operations. So these little robots can trade and know where is the revenue, where is the royalty, where is the, you know, interest, and they remove that manager. But in a way, the trader, the investor, the day trader, it's the one that does all that, needs to take care of this, unless you are managed to program this crazy smart contracts that probably people do, you know. But yeah, I think it's the artists become data. I mean, I think artistic practice gets integrated to day trading, or day trading gets integrated to artistic practice. It's either one of those.
Maybe it's, yeah, we can discuss on meta level, but maybe some people here from the last semester can remember we had an artist. He's doing generative art, and it's somehow happened now that generative art became very, I don't know, easily NFTized or assetized. And, but he said, and he is, where is he exhibiting? So on all these platforms, but he says, no, I'm not really getting rich because it's not a market, it's bazaar. And you have to be loud and sell yourself day and night, yeah. And all the time you have to say, you have to be optimistic, you have to be positive, you have to show that you are already rich anyway. Yeah, so there is this is the aura, actually, that is
performing
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, and it's on one hand, it is not just one can think that it is it's not a consequence. Yeah, but it's just how it works, how it should.
But I think with this thing of the generative artworks and stuff, it's not a coincidence. Like all these financial derivatives are literally these, you know, derivatives from products, you know, like they can make a derivative product from pensions, or they make these financial derivatives. And these generative artworks, I think they mirror that condition of this dynamism of the financial markets.
Mm-hmm. It's known that I'm very curious about the words and the use of words, and I always try to say that actually you decided how you name something, and by this you can explain something, or by this you can change a lot. So I would always say that, I don't know, if you say interface instead of experience, that half of the problem of bad interfaces will be solved. Yeah. I remember that here some years ago was the great archivist and filmmaker and artist Jason Scott, exactly on this stage. It was quite some time ago, almost 10 years ago, and we talked about the things that getting deleted online that we store in cloud, but then they delete it, and he just said, to protect yourself, just every time you want to say cloud, say clown. And then you already, yeah, clown computing, clown.
I wonder what would be if
I wanted to ask you about what should one say instead of, do you suggest to say asset instead of NFT, or asset instead of token, or where should, and because this is the word you want to establish, but instead of which one exactly?
I think, for instance, this thing that in the page of Ethereum is like the Internet of Assets, it gives us the answer. Like Web3 is the Internet of Assets. Mm-hmm. NFTs are assets, you know. I don't know, like, of course, tokens are token. Like, I think, for instance, tokens are a very specific thing of the crypto environment. You know, like, they have blockchains, they have cryptocurrencies, and they, you know, have these tokens that are fungible or not. You can call tokens, I think, is a useful thing. But NFTs, this specific thing of the NFT, that you have this unique kind of, you know, representation of something that can be traded and will generate revenue, that's an asset. That's the same way an apartment, you know, if you buy it and you rent it and will give you revenue, it's an asset. I think asset, if we put the emphasis on assets, maybe it will not be that easy to make this that mainstream, you know, if they would have started from there, you know. I think, obviously, the people that are investing in Web3, they're like venture capitalists, like A16C, that are like, they have so much money to create concepts and gradients and aesthetics and terms, you know, to push this. But we can see through. I mean, as artists and media art students, we definitely must see through.
Are there questions or point for discussions from your side? Something what you maybe want to disagree? It's absolutely welcomed. But I don't know what should be with the microphone. There.
Okay, hello. I promised my girlfriend to ask this question. So we were joking around a few hours ago about NFTs and stuff. And she said that the crypto bros, so everybody who's investing in the assets digitally, are the new hype beasts. So basically, people who buy expensive clothing and brag about it.
Did you understand? New what? I didn't understand.
So that the crypto investors are the new hype beasts of the of the web. So they are bragging about their assets and running around aimlessly.
Yeah. Then the question.
Would you agree?
I agree that it's like, you know, conspicuous consumption. It's about, you know, showing off The thing is, showing off a JPEG of an ape is just like stupid, you know? It's just like, the thing is like, why? That is, that's the thing. But yeah, it's I think absolutely it has to do with showing off and the status. And you can see now people saying, oh, in a few years, owning a node is going to be like owning a apartment in Manhattan, and they brag about the central land they buy. So yeah, I mean, it is like that, but it's just, whack that they
owning what will become the same as owning?
I know, just these cryptos that you see, you know, bragging online about like certain parts of the infrastructure, you know, or of how to say it, like I cannot remember exactly what it was, but they were bragging about like owning something. You know, mm-hmm. that it was not a JPEG or something. It was more like infrastructure would equal a building in Manhattan or something like that.
Oh, know? Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember exactly what was, to be honest about that. But mm-hmm. yeah, they brag a lot about this land, digital land, digital things, or, you know, ends or whatever, domain, ether names and stuff. I agree.
But don't tell it to your girlfriend, but
don't become that.
Yep. Hi, thanks so much for your talk, Geraldine. My name's Maya. We know each other from Twitter, and we follow each other there. And I loved your writing, and I'm really glad that I was able to make this talk. I'm really happy that you talked about language and just the conversation that both of you were having right now. It's something that I struggle with a lot, and I appreciate, you know, the way you've sort of very pointedly you talk about crypto on Twitter, but also in other places. And, you know, you mentioned Morozov's that piece about map without territory. And actually, in the start to that, he talks about this performative power of language. And I think the question is, how is not talking about something in a certain way, like, what's the tipping point? When does that stop being a strategy? My work is about artificial intelligence, or rather I keep trying to put like quotes around it and say that it's not a thing. It's not a thing. It's infrastructure. It's clouds. It's data that's unethically taken from people. It's machine learning. When you are faced with people who control the narrative and who can invest in those aesthetics and change it, sort of, if you could speak to that struggle over language and its performance, that's one. And since I have the mic, I'm just going to ask another sort of clarificatory question about, you made a point about the new asset class as you combined elitism and populism, or these two different kinds of communities, and if you could just clarify that a little bit, and what you meant in relation to that, and how they sort of they've come together now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's very important to not use their language. That's why, I mean, in Twitter, I write crypto instead of crypto with Y. And I'm very conscious that I don't want to use the language of the acronym and GM and gonna make it, yeah. And of course, it's also performative, you know. But I guess we cannot just give up and, you know, start incorporating into our language these things. Like if we, you know, I mean, unless you are okay with it and you want to participate in these groups of investors, I guess it's okay, you know, or even in those artistic communities, you know, which is a big problem now that, I mean, there is a lot of division in this media digital art communities because of this, you know. But I guess in the same way that they are like pushing super hard, you can push back too, you know. And language and refusing and retiring kind of, you know, and yeah, refusing not as a symbolic thing, but making it more evident. Well, it's language still, but it's for me, it's a very, very conscious thing. And when I write, what I am trying to do with these essays is actually to go through this language and see what it's behind that, underlying beyond all these terms, that they have lots of terms. We were talking, this Web3, I wish, were there. They have lots of super hype, you know, terms. So yeah, it's a conscious thing. And about the populism and elitism, yeah, I think I've been writing that, you know, because cyberpunk is this thing that is very important for these communities of investors and artists. And I think we can see cyberpunk now as, you know, cyber as this networked space that it's very populist, you know, internet populism, and elitist as finance. You know, finance is a very elitist space where you need, you know, there is like limousines and suits and, you know, skyscrapers. I mean, it's like, and it's quite crazy how this is, this field put together, you know, populism and elitism in such a, like, a seamless way. So, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to see, to go through that.
Sorry, can I just ask, are you saying that artists have become, or sort of any, what is the populist part in that? Is it what is it the NFT? Is it the token? Is it the artist itself, which becomes, which can be sort of divided and conquered?
No, I mean, with populism is just the style of the narrative. No, this thing of like, we all are going to make, and all these things about, I mean, it's very populist to say we're all going to get rich. I don't think there is nothing more populist than that. So just the style of the narrative, the promotion, the style of promotion, it's very populist. And all the, you know, all the virality of money in this way is very populist, I think.
Hi, I would like to get your idea about from the dot-com bubble right there. Around this time, there were artists that were working like what formally or on the outside might look similar. You would think of a group like eToy selling themselves, like making stocks of themselves and selling them. Or, I don't know, artists like David Bowie selling stocks of himself. Mm-hmm. And I would be interested in what is your thought about how is this a reflection of what is just happening and artists are picking up these things, and what is different in between this happening like before the dot-com bust, obviously,
yeah,
and now? Yeah, what would your comments be on that?
Yeah, I mean, for instance, I have to say, in 2008 or something, I used to have I did a project called Tanda Foundation, in which I literally did pins where were tokens, and I was just selling it with a vending machine someone helped me to do. And my idea was that money I would get it to do grants with my friends, you know, and we used to have a website and a very kind of DAO, you know, like if you think about like people would vote for which, you know, artists and media artists and I mean, digital culture have always been messing around with this form, no, trying to see what we can do when you add money to your practice or like to different interactions. I think the difference, and it's not something that I say it actually in my article, I mention it like Joshua Kalev, an artist, wrote this article about artists using contracts conceptualists. And I think what it changes, and he mentioned it there, is the intention. You know, now it feels just so complacent. You know, there is no really, I don't feel there is experimentation in this. It's just something you need to do in order to sell it, to distribute it, to stuff. There, I don't see any experimentation. There are some artists that started tokenizing their practice before the boom, you know, that you could see it as a bit experimental. But I think it gets the financial parts subsumes kind of the experimentation. That's, I think, is the difference, you know, that it feels subsumed. It feels dominated by not art, but by finance. That's, for me, the difference. Yeah, we will see.
If I can say something to it. Of course. Yeah. I wanted, if I'm allowed, I wanted to add to it from My experience in the, I want to add to the your statement that there is, sort of also experimentation. Of course, there is always, one can say, way to subvert the system, yeah, to make something that would go to NFT and subvert the logic of it, yeah. And this is how then something like real NFT art would be born. And people say to me, "Yeah, why do you put on your Twitter no NFT offers? Yeah, why you don't participate in any exhibition initiative, even the one that is subversive or present itself as something? No, we are not just NFT, we are doing something bigger or better." But it's for me absolutely clear that this is the system that the art is only needed in this system to promote the elite part that is all in this system. It is the, I've never in all this 25 years doing art, being very close to the big tech and everything, there was never such a situation that actually the only thing is that is needed from the art to be JPEG, sorry to say it, and because this is and plus artist name, and this is how we'll make this financial pyramid grow.
Yeah, just to add to that, just very fast, I didn't show the video, but you can find it in this magazine and marketplace called Outland. And there is this interview with the owner or founder of the Museum of Crypto Art, in which he said in the interview they make that crypto art is important because it's the way, the way in which crypto will be brought to the mainstream and the masses, you know? So that's why he said in that interview, the way we display this art and present it to the world is what it will help us, you know, kind of like, make crypto, you know, massify crypto. So, yeah, I think you really should. It's also linked in my last essay, if you want to see it, the link to that there. He said, like, super clear, and I agree with them, like, art is just, it's just the flukes they need to this. I mean, it's someone else's art project, whoever came up with this. I don't think it was, like, orchestrated, you know? But, it's someone else's art project. Like, artists are just instrumental in this. It's not the other way around, which is what Evany said before. Like, it's the other way around. Like, crypto is, like, burning the art world and not the other way around. Mm-hmm. Livia.
So thanks for the talk. If you don't mind an off-crypto question, I was wondering while you were talking about assets that actually in my everyday life, in my work, asset means something very different. So since we are in a public library, I may pose this question because asset can be something that is part of the commons. How would you relate that? So how would you, pronounce that triangle, which asset, the commons and economical or like the capitalist, context, is included?
Yeah, I am actually aware that a lot of the software you use to, you know, collections or, you know, to archive cultural material of that, they have these categories of assets, you know. They're like cultural assets. I'm aware of that. And also, for instance, like spies are assets, you know. And there is these different ways in which the word asset is used, but at the end it's something of value, You know, like, is that. Actually, right now, the work I'm doing is trying to assemble, like, a small cultural history of assets. So, in which I'm trying to include all these different ways in which assets can be interpreted. Fabian Minessa, I was talking the other day, the one of the editors of the book of assetization, he said that, like, I mean, there are, like, two kind of positions, that it's asset is really not the problem, but it's distribution, you know, or how it's valorized. And another, he told me about, like, other positions in which the problem is just asset, which is this, you know, Vermögen kind of thing, wealth, language of capital that we should stop using. So there are, like, these different interpretations, and there is a lot more. And, for instance, I'm very interested in the way Unity and software started using, like, well, Unity is recently, but in the 80s, when software started using the language of assets, you know, that, or that now you download something and you have your asset folder of, you know, Creative Cloud or Photoshop and stuff. That started in the 80s that someone came up with the idea that, like, data and it was an asset, you know. So I'm working actually on that now, trying to assemble this kind of cultural history of assets. And I'm not quite sure if it should be a text or trying to engage with more with this kind of objects, you know. So, there are different aspects of assets. Respond
mm-hmm.
to your question.
Some other questions?
Not? Sorry, I have so many questions. Can I ask just one more, please?
Go ahead.
Of course.
Thank you for your... Thank you for your space and patience. What do you think is the conversation happening in big arts and cultural institutions as they navigate this landscape? I see amongst friends who are artists or people working in arts institutions, I know that there are these discussions happening about how should we deal with what's happening with the assetization of the economies in which artists work. Because in places like the United States, many of these cultural institutions are funded. They don't have a lot of state funding for the arts. When the relationship with Wall Street and capital is so close in the arts, do you feel like a different kind of shift in different parts of the world? And when the state is one of the largest investors in art versus, you know, sort of banking and financial institutions, could you speak to that a little bit? Thank you.
Well, I mean, that's a huge problem because a lot of this, as I said, comes from a specific context where public funding is very little, even though they have lots of money. You know, they have little public funding, but they have all these, like, oligarchs, Western oligarchs funding, you know, museums and stuff. And now this new asset class, these wealthy crypto people, they are, like, already... getting funding a lot of stuff, the Ethereum Foundation is giving, like, money for exhibitions, or, you know, there are, like, people that are, like, crypto wealthy, and they call that, they're, like, giving donations to, you know, independent institutions. So, I mean, it's happening, and that has happened before too, you know, like, rich people have always given money to culture because it's, like, some sign of status and it washed a little bit their responsibility to society, right? I mean, that's not a new thing. Not before it was fiat, now it's just crypto. No, that's okay. But I think and as I said, I'm very happy I'm giving this talk in this public institution, is because I'm not aware of those conversations you're saying. Not being kind of very open against something and critical about it is not a good thing because sometimes you really don't get attention because you're supposed to be very positive and, like, la la la, you know. But I think institutions, I mean, what we really need to talk about is, like, why the cultural economy is so bad for artists of all kinds. This is not only about digital culture, because now digital culture is culture. You know, now we are past kind of, like, digital culture in that sense. So I think the thing is, like, we need to talk about why curators have wages and artists don't. We need to talk about why we get paid like so little to do so much work. We need to talk about the commodified labor. You know, we need to also, artists, recognize ourselves as workers. We need to recognize, you know, that not everybody can do art all day. That's not the way most of artists do art, you know. And, or if we want artists to do art all day, then we need to create the conditions for that. We need to, you know, make possible that not only developers of Web3 can live in Berlin or in big cities. You know, so I think the conversation is like the thing we need to talk about is like huge. And it's not really about the crypto for art, but it's just about like equality and social equality. So yeah, it's not easy at all.
I think I can also add to your opinion and answer to this question that I think that you mentioned cultural institutions, galleries, not to forget auction houses and whatever other type of institutions. I would say that they were very fast to rethink their agenda, and it's very much affected what is supposed to be digital art. So many allowed to themselves to make such a gap in their own education and even their own experience, as if there is some traditional art and NFT. And there was nothing in between. Yeah. And under NFT, there would be covered something digital, what was possible to translate into some format that could become an asset. There one can see it everywhere to this or that extent the last seasons. No, not the last seasons when... In 1 year, it's like it's a wave. Maybe it's a wave that will go away, but at this moment it's...
I mean, there is a lot of money, and that changed things.
Mm-hmm. Someone wants to add something to my remark, sad remark. Not. I had some... when we talked about the language that was used, I looked at what I had in my email from the language that what I get from the evangelists and organizers and people who want to promote NFTs, and there is the language that I'm always surprised about the hypocrisy every time. Of the renaming thing and sort of really, yeah, obeying to these new rules. So this is an NFT, yeah, initiative described. I will not tell who is writing. The hope is that the new communities will form, that even art performances can be sold and traded, that entirely new genres can emerge because the conservative gatekeepers will be undermined. And this is the part of the invitation to talking about new genres, new communities, but the request is to make a screenshot of my work. Yeah, and this is
the populist new part. Yeah. You know, there is this like a very, very clear populist kind of narrative. And at the same time, it's like, I mean, how much it costs to mint that? You know, how much gas you need? Who can pay those things? I mean, certain people certainly can, but it's a certain class, the asset class, that can do that.
Should I read one more?
Yeah.
Should I? So again, the request was similar, but the description was, we strongly believe that NFTs and blockchain technology are a fascinating movement, but also require strong artistic voices to shape it even further. Both digital as well as physical art can learn from one another and change the perception of the art trade and the art world in general. And again, yeah, it was about the animated GIF. And but this is not on in this connection, but also that 2022 and the organization suggests that digital and physical art can learn from each other, and there was no other way to learn.
Yeah, the thing with physical art is just I imagine like, you know, flash dance. You know, when they say physical art now. Yeah, it became, I mean, it was very regressive when it happened, you know, in so many ways. There was a lot of regression in the language, in the forms, in the way we understand media, in the way already, you know, galleries were already, you know, talking about art, or not only galleries, like commercial galleries, but institutions. There, it was like a big regression, all of this. And so, which for me is this thing that not because you're a media artist, you need to engage and with the technology. And you said, like, no, I mean, some things can be regressive, you know, like, and you will not get forward by that, you know, no matter how many times you say future and blockchain and hyperstructure and whatever, you know. And I think it also will maybe, as I said, it gives us the opportunity to think in another things, you know, like, before we think about, you know, open source, we were thinking about digital commons, open source, all these kind of things when, like, in this Web 2 kind of thing, Web 1. But now, for instance, I'm thinking about negative commons, you know, how all these forms of... negative commons is like a term of Alexandre Monin. It's not something I came up with it. But I'm trying to... I mean, I'm thinking about blockchain computation as a negative commons. You know, all these crypto farms that will, like, they're sucking energy. What kind of, like, things now are generating this? And it's not nice. No, this is mostly a negative space. And then we need to engage with that, you know, and minting stuff, you know, for me, it's not the way to engage with it. And of course, for other artists, everyone can do whatever they want. This is what we get for a place where we can do whatever we want with no accountability, which is art, and then we get blockchain culture. I think.
Can I read one more?
Yeah, more like one.
No, it's actually, it will be the last one, and it's from the exhibition, announcement of the exhibition that you sent to me the other day, and it says, art and blockchain takes a step away from these preconceptions. It's about the, that it's only for sale. This exhibition takes away these preconceptions and aims to present a new way of seeing NFTs and blockchain art as something with deep roots in the tradition of digital art. And here it sounds like a great offer, but in fact, I would want to state now that NFTs, they really cut the roots at this moment to the traditions of digital art. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be just great, for instance, an exhibition that it's at the intersection of art and finance, you know, and that they said, like, we're going to connect our roots to, you know, financial derivatives and find out where is really this product that relates to this form of art. I think that would be fantastic, and that artists wouldn't be that complacent, and they wouldn't be, like, you know, so complacent with their collectors, which are like rich people. So I think that would be fantastic to have this non-complacent and trying to find the relation between crypto art and the financial roots of all of this. I think there is a huge project for a curator there.
I don't have more quotes.
Maybe you need to do that the project, Alia. Finding those roots. I didn't ask you, actually, I was going to ask you something. Now I'm going to ask something, Alia. That when you were doing net art, when you started, what was the role of finance? You know, because, I mean, there was finance going on and traders were starting using computers to, you know, all this matrix green thing. That was the screen of the traders, you know. What was the role of finance in, like, net art? How was acknowledged or, you know, did you thought about it at all? Or
I think not personally, And there was the dot-com bubble that you put in Web 2.1. Yeah, it's interesting. Of course, it's Web 1.0, sorry, Web 1.0. But at the same time, it was already the bubble, the craze, the finance, the dot-com. Was the next step. It was something what would come to replace. And at this moment, actually, it was attitude to the art that was at this moment blossoming online was a little bit not to such extent, but I would say similar to the NFT platforms, because it was about, yeah, we have money, we are building amazing new 3D or Flash or whatever, these plugins don't exist anymore, websites, and we would need art on it. So we will put your work in the iframe on our website. Yeah. Not to such an extent, but it was, yeah, again, it was, as soon as there are money, there is, I think, exact imagination that it should be very simple and rectangular, if possible. Yeah, so this is what I remember. But it was what I remember, that the bubble, when bubble bursted, it was quite a sad time for everybody, because like it looked like the internet is a place to work, to make some, also to earn money or to have your galleries, that it's also over. It took quite some years to that the industry recovered, that artists recovered.
I mean, and I just want to say, there's absolutely nothing wrong with, like, artists making money out of their art, no? The thing is that the narrative, all the kind of narrative and images and, you know, and propaganda you need in crypto to do that is kind of, like, too much, you know? But, of course, artists should get paid, but the price shouldn't be, you know, this social, environmental, socially, political, and environmentally high. It's just too high for what it is, for some people to make it, you know. And we don't make it until we all make it. So,
yeah, I think we are, you can... If you want to say something that you see all this different, please say. Or that you can also say, now we listen to you, old ladies, and we go to Mint, because this is also what argument I get very often from. As soon as there are no counter arguments, the age would come to there. I don't understand it because I'm old.
I just see people older than me minting, so I don't know. Yeah. Like, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Old and normie. But maybe it's always... Yeah, this together goes together, hand in hand. So that maybe if there are no questions and no comments, yeah, we can also just finish, otherwise I will get too sentimental.
No, but thanks for, yeah.
What are you?
If anyone wants, what's the, did you? Oh. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for the financial advice.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me today and for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, boys and girls.